This is the Gary V Audio Experience.
So for the record, when they said you're going to have some time to talk to Gary V, I'm like, all right, I got to dig in, try to figure out as much stuff as possible that I can give him shit about. I wanted to hate on you for the NFT thing, especially just given where the market is at right now. By the time I got done watching a couple of podcasts with you, I was like, all right, if there is an NFT that I'm going to fuck with aside from the CryptoPunk, which I already own, I was very impressed by the VFriends thing because I see that you actually have a roadmap, like a real game plan for how you're going to continue to build the value of these in the long term, which I don't have that assurance about almost any of the other NFTs I've seen.
Well, I'm sure if you did your homework, you start, to your point, you probably walked into some buzzsaws, which is in every fucking interview I gave for the entire last 15 months. I'm like, 99% of this shit is going to zero.
You did say that, and I was
99% of this is going to zero. On the flip side, to your point, I'm also looking for people that look like me. I'm a 25 years in a row gangster operating fucking entrepreneur. This is what I do. I build actual businesses, period. It is what it is. You like it, you don't like it, it's the truth. I know how to fucking operate, which is why you felt that.
And actually knowing you and knowing how you operate, it does kind of weird me out when I watch certain YouTube videos where they're talking about you like you're, I'm not gonna say any names, maybe these are some people that you know or have done business with, but there's some very, very scammy personalities. It's a whole identity these days to basically just be a huckster and just be selling some bullshit all the time. I don't feel like a lot of people on YouTube that I've seen give you a hard time really understand the depth of how much real business you've done.
And I'm empathetic to that, to your point. Like, if you're out there, you have this, I have this, people have this. If you're out there, especially in today's society, you're gonna have, you know, shots fired at you. I'm empathetic when people decide to make shit and try to go at me that they haven't spent 50 hours. Like, who the fuck am I to have somebody spend 50 hours to cross every T and I to realize, wait a minute, even though I have a lot of high energy and I might look the part to them, that under the hood, there's some real ass shit.
Right.
They weren't in a room where you and I were in 4 years ago where we spent 2 hours really talking about your operations. They don't know that part of me.
Right.
And honestly, I'm not like, my feelings don't get hurt.
Right.
Like the truth is always gonna win out. It's gonna be what it's gonna be. Everybody who shit on Dwayne The Rock Johnson, that he couldn't go to Hollywood and make it, has to eat crow. Everybody who shit on Marky Mark, when he tried to be Mark Wahlberg, had to eat it.
Did you buy in early on The Rock? What did you buy him at?
What
were shares going for at that time?
I wasn't paying attention when he made that transition, but he's fucking, when I think about The Rock, Kevin Hart, and Ryan Reynolds, they all sit in this same shelf in my head, which is they're famous as fuck, but they work like such fucking dogs, and they're, you know, like, you know what I mean? Like, those guys are like actual entrepreneurs, comma, they have talents and other fame.
Right, 100%. Okay, but so the big thing, like, especially these
By the way, to give some flowers while I'm sitting with you?
What?
You're like, what, give it to
me? For me?
Like,
for you?
For you. Early on, when we chopped up years ago and I was doing my homework, I'm like, man, this guy works. It's a very big part of my first pass-through whiff test. Is somebody actually working or are they trying to make something happen quick?
Right.
Just the amount of content, interviews, the way you interviewed, like the operations of the store, I'm like, oh, this guy fucking works.
I hate to let you down though, like I felt like this is the year where I finally realized, like, okay, you've been doing this shit for a long ass time. You made a lot of fucking money. You can afford to take a week off here, a week there, going, you know, just in terms of just.
By the way, that's not disappointing. That makes me proud of you.
Right.
But spending time with the kid makes you have to consider that shit, you know?
Of course. A lot of things do. Family, a life event. You could lose an uncle and be like, and then you looked up to and be like, fuck, I don't want to end up like that. Things happen. By the way, I take plenty of personal time. I go hard when I'm in it. When I'm on the field, I go hard. But, you know, that's not what I meant by work. I didn't mean, and I didn't know, and I don't even know right now, that you were going 19 hours every day, 7 days. It wasn't that. It was the amount of output you were putting out, and the interviews I watched, they were thoughtful. You weren't, even what you just said right now, even if you want to make it as a Raz, you're like, let me go do a little work. And you put in work. A lot of people don't put in work, Adam. They don't.
They put in a lot of work for a little while.
And that's fine. Everybody's got different ambitions.
Yeah.
Everybody can have their thing. But you put in work. I respect that.
That is what it takes, for sure. Okay, but so how do you separate yourself in a world where I think we both agree that 99% of NFTs have basically turned out to be scams. You're almost not even seeing new ones at the same rate that you used to. How do you solve the ultimate question of this day and age, which is like, I'm in the NFT business, but I'm not a scammer, and I believe that this shit has long-term value. What are the most important things to communicate to the audience?
I think this is really interesting. I think most people try to convince, and I believe in just having conviction. Meaning, in 1998, when this the reason I knew it was gonna happen is because I saw it when I was a kid with internet stocks. Everybody was so hyped about the internet that every internet company was worth a trillion, and they sucked. And that's what happened here. The NFT thing is gonna happen. But in the gold rush of the first year, there's a lot of that greed and bullshit.
Right.
What happened in 98, 99, 2000 was PayPal, Amazon, and eBay, they just fucking worked. They just made real companies, they just waited, they ate their shit.
They were patient.
They, you know, I'm sure they got called, I'm sure Jeff Bezos to his face was said, you're a scam and a fad because all these internet stocks just crashed. He in his mind said, I don't think so. Let me go to work. I'll see you in 2010. For the 1% to 2% out there right now that really believe they're building something meaningful and they're getting caught up in the muckery, they gotta shut their mouth, put their fucking helmet on, go to work, and pop up in 2037 and say, I told you. You do not know how to build a business around the intellectual property. You have no shot. And a lot of that has to do with real life access, has to do with events, has to do with virtual access. To your point, I'm going more of a Pokemon, Transformers, G.I. Joe, My Little Pony route.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of ways to use the blockchain. Most people don't even understand the blockchain yet. They don't really understand what's actually happening. And, you know, I think this is a great conversation. I'll be honest with you, I'm relieved that we're finally in this chapter. The last 15 months have been anxious to me because I knew that this was gonna happen. And as much as the content as I put out, to your point, it's people didn't hear that part.
So is this almost a relief, seeing the market sort of cleanse itself of all this bullshit?
You always want the market to be healthy, and the market is never healthy when it's overvaluated or grossly undervaluated. And overvaluated is even more scary because people that buy lottery tickets are the same people that look into these projects. There's a desperation. There's a I like a quick buck. There's a it's too good to be true. And when you're that person, you're lacking patience, you have insecurity, you're looking for something to fill a void, and you're grasping at straws and you get caught, and that sucks.
If Disney drops NFTs for, you know, Mickey Mouse and Donald Duck and all this shit and the Star Wars characters and shit like that, if you see Disney and Nintendo and all these big companies who own all this amazing IP, if they drop all of their characters as NFTs, is that a good thing or a bad thing for VFriends?
It's not an if, it's a when. It's a non-event for VFriends. Meaning, to your point, I already know it's a when. I don't need Disney or Nintendo or Pokemon's validation. They've already been flirting with digital goods a lot to begin with. And most of all, the world's abundant. So even if they come in, they rightfully, deservingly, for what they've done for the last 50 years, will be monster market share. They should be. Like Donald Duck should be.
Right.
And Pikachu should be. Zelda should be. And that'd be great, but that's not gonna, you know, it's kind of the way I think about the world. The reason I cheer for everyone is because nobody's winning is coming out of my winning.
But
it's just not how the world works.
But doesn't it make the VFriends seem a little less special? Like 10 years from now, do you think the most interesting thing about the VFriends is gonna be that they were initially funded by an NFT drop?
I think it will be, yes. I think, but check this out. Yes and no. For example, I don't know if everybody here thinks the most interesting thing about Transformers and He-Man is that they started as cartoons after school. I think it's interesting because I'm a business nerd. I realized in the 80s, after school television created a bunch of big IPs. You know, for me it will be. To rescind my answer, probably not. If for business people that are being thoughtful, it will be. But, you know, for me, again, if I do what I need to do, it's gonna be irrelevant of anything else that's happening because people are gonna give a fuck about Empathy Elephant or Patient Panda because I made them, not because of the timing or it was NFTs. And I plan on doing that.
If in 20 years, the Gary Vee factor seems like it's not that big a deal, that's a great thing for the IP,
way,
right?
By the way, that's my preference. I say a lot that I want to convert from being Mickey Mouse and Hulk Hogan to being Vince McMahon and Walt Disney. There's a lot of shit that I have to, that I want to say to the world, but I recognize that Gary V, me, I'm limited. There's a lot of people that fuck with me. There's a lot of people that will never fuck with me because I'm a single human being with a certain communication style and I am who I am. My 275 characters, I can push fucking account. I'll give you an example. I think most of the people's anxiety in this room and the world is because people don't want to be accountable. And when you're not accountable, you blame everybody else. So for me, I can say that 100,000 times, but the fact that I can make Accountable Ant into an extremely popular children's book series, and now 7-year-olds are like, accountability's cool. Like, I can fucking do what the fuck I want, Adam, and that's, I think about it that way.
Definitely, 100%. What would you say to people who have taken a real ass beating over the last week or so in the crypto market? What's your advice? Like, you know, should they still keep chasing these dreams? Or for a lot of people, obviously, they've been irresponsible.
You only lose when you sell.
Well, sometimes you lose when you don't sell too, right? All those Luna holders, KSI and his $3 million worth of Luna, he seems like he lost, he didn't sell.
To your point, you know, if you look at the entire marketplace, Luna, and I'm undereducated on cryptocurrencies, I actually own only Bitcoin in currencies, and then I really understand NFTs because of the collectible shit,
right.
So I don't fuck with currencies, but my understanding from my currency friends is Luna had a value proposition that they promised that became exposed to not be true, and so 100% of the confidence went away.
Right.
A lot of coins are out there that have declined, they didn't have the extremity of what happened with Luna.
Right.
Again, I don't like to talk about shit I don't know, so that's my very far away headline reading hypothesis I heard from some friends. But for the rest of the crew that are getting smashed on their Solana, they bought for 200, now it's 50. Or Ethereum, you paid 4,000 and now it's 1,900. Or Bitcoin, you paid 60 and now it's 30. In that world, if you bought it because you believed in it, well, why would you sell it when others don't? And that to me is the punchline of this whole thing. You only lose on your convictions when you sell if you didn't actually have conviction and you were just fucking following for the moment, or you were looking to make a quick dollar.
Right.
And so I would tell them to be patient. If you believed in this shit, hold on.
Do you think I should sell my CryptoPunk?
I don't. You know, to me, I believe NFTs are here forever. NFTs, like the internet in 98.
Right.
I thought the 98%, back to what you saw, I was right on that. I think CryptoPunks, out of everything, including VFriends, and I believe in myself the most, has a very different sitting in the whole game. It is the project that fucking created this game. In 50 years, when this is a thing, the historians are gonna go back and they're gonna be like, that one. Bored Ape has to be Kith, Supreme, Bape for 20 years to justify their value. VFriends, I have to go out and actually build Pokemon to justify the value. World of Women has to do that. Cool Cats, Doodles, Moonbirds with Kevin Rose, they have to go out and execute for a decade properly just to fucking be valued at what they are now.
Right.
Punks doesn't have to do shit. History.
That's what really sold me on it in the beginning, and I didn't really understand that when you look at VFriends or the Apes, that working to build the IP would be the other thing that
could
set an NFT apart.
Correct.
The CryptoPunks are automatically scarce because they have this legacy of being
so early.
It's
history.
Yeah.
It's history. It set off the whole game. One of the rarest things in CryptoPunks is an ape. Like, that's 40, like it is the game. The reason people collect aliens and zombies and apes in like every collection that happened in 2021 is because of punks. Providence, which was a word thrown around a lot in the beginning of NFT 2020, 2021, that's disappeared in this gold rush greed phase, will come back. People will start looking at the history of the game, and I think things on Ethereum, 2017, 18, 19 projects, will have a different floss than the shit like VFriends and others that popped off in the next chapter. Those projects, me included, have a lot of fucking work to do.
When you look at the apes though, are you kind of in awe of how massively executed their marketing has been?
So cheer for them, heavy, pumped for them. You know, when I look at that one, I'm like, you know, with me, I'm like, oh, I'm lucky. I get to run a marathon to build a Pokemon in Disney. They're so built on cool, and you know this because you fuck with culture, street culture, pop culture, hip hop culture, brand culture. Fucking staying on top as a fashion brand
right.
is hard.
Yes.
Like, Who's rocking Supremes here today?
Well, I did see one of our filmers has it on his beanie, but that's just one.
You know what I mean? Compared to 6 years ago, yeah. Right? You know, like Palace, Kip, Supreme, that's a fucking hard-ass game. And so, but it happens. Look at this. Nike's done it. Nike's done it for 40 years. So for me, I'm cheering for apes to do it for 40 years, but they've got a lot of work to do, like all of us, in different ways. But yeah, I'm very impressed. I love it. Guy Oseri, somebody I've known in business for a long time. He's heavily involved with them. So I've met one or two of the founders in the early days of this whole world. We chopped it up in those early days. I have 7 board apes that my, you know, so I'm cheering for them heavy.
So you know how Lil Baby has one of those apes on his neck?
Yes.
If you want me to be like that for V Friends and to just have a fucking puffin on my face or something, like this little puffin, I got some real estate right here. I could see that being like a cool look.
That would be a tremendous priority of mine.
I'll talk to your whole team about it, yeah. What about like when you see them just, I don't know what the back end deal is with it or anything, but when they're like, oh man, look at Eminem has this bored ape now. Do you look at that and you're like, that's a brilliant marketing idea. But do you feel like that's not on brand for the V Friends, or how do you think about that kind of celebrity endorsement?
I'm concerned. I was concerned about this first 15 months. So I took it slow and steady in this first chapter because I knew that it could be great for the short term, but it created potential vulnerability for the long term. I knew that I could have went out and biz dev with a lot of people I know, but I want people to buy a V Friend because they actually want to hold it forever, not because it's of the moment or they bought it to flip. I have no sense of what any A-list celebrity has done or why they went in or why they bought or why they changed their profile picture. You know how things happen. Something becomes a movement and just happens. Some of them just did it because other celebrities did it. Some did it because they believe it's a great investment. Some people did it because they got a short-term marketing deal. Everyone does it for different reasons. I didn't want to do too much in the first chapter, which we're getting out of right now, because I knew there would be too much emotion and too much muckery. And so I'm just focused on, you know, I have VCon coming up this weekend in Minnesota, 7,000-8,000 people, huge event, really excited about it. Focused on making that epic. I was focused on series 2 because I had to really get the characters from my doodles into the creation form of how I was gonna build the IP. Listen, you know this about me, Adam. I'm a businessman that happens to live on social and do shit. So I've been in businessman mode the first year and a half. I'll do the tortoise game. Like, I'm gonna win this race in the end. I know it, I know who I am. And I really don't even look at it as a race against other projects. I just know what it takes to build something meaningful, and I'm willing to do it slower and meaningfully. Not that I'd be, I want every fucking A, B, C, D list celebrity and human being on earth to fucking buy a V Friend and put it in their account. It's just not the thing that I'm most focused on in chapter 1.
Gotcha. Another question.
How about you? Let me flip it on you.
Yeah, flip it on me.
What has been your journey in these 12 to 14 months on NFT? Like, this looks fucking crazy. Oh my God, this is legit. Fuck, wait, is this a scam? Like, how has been, give me your roller coaster.
So initially I was trying to be open-minded about it, learning as much as I possibly could. I listened to a podcast with a poker player named Doug Polk that basically convinced me that the CryptoPunks were gonna be a very good long-term investment. I got my girl to go in half with me on one. We went to buy it at 80K. By the time we had figured out how to transfer the money and everything, it was 160K. At one point, I think it was 450K for the floor,
yep,
which ours is approximately at the floor, I believe. Yep. I'm not sure what it would be right now.
About 100, 120.
Okay, yeah. I had a moment where I was really thinking long and hard about doing a no-jumper like series of NFTs where there would be a limited number created for each interview that I did.
Yep.
I ended up running into the problem of like, I don't own any of these people's likenesses, right, and it would be like unspeakably difficult to get permission to use, especially for interviews that I've done 5-6 years ago. You know, am I gonna get permission to use Lil Peep's face for 5 NFTs? It just didn't really make sense to me. Looking at it now, I am also concerned, like, wow, that would be tough to convince the world that I was on the up and up in that regard. But, you know, I'm not closing the door on it by any means. I still think that there's definitely technology that's important there. I'm just extremely skeptical of like most of what people are putting out there.
It makes sense, right? Like, if you look at influencers, if you look at social media accounts, YouTube channels, internet stocks, like most things aren't good. That's how the world actually works, yeah. Right? But when there's a brand new technology, everyone always gets, this is just textbook, happened in social networks. Do you know that there were social network, Bebo. Do you know that Bebo sold for $850 million to AOL?
Yeah, I remember that.
Like there was 100 MySpaces, there was 200 MySpaces back in the day. Early on shit is muckery. That's why this worked out. And this one had a lot of money being thrown around because of the crypto craze. So I think we're in a better spot now. I'm excited about that. I think it's gonna be a lot healthier this next year. People are gonna be more thoughtful. They're gonna wanna know who the fuck's running the project. Are they capable? Everyone's like, what's the roadmap? People would say, we're gonna do this, this, and this. I was like, do you think they can do that? That's like pitch decks for startups. I met thousands of people in the last decade who are like, here's what my company's gonna do. And I had to say, I don't think you can do that. Right. I'm not gonna write you a check.
But isn't that a terrible part of being an entrepreneur or being, especially like somebody like you, who people want you to invest in their projects, that at a certain part, your job kind of becomes just saying no to people over and over and over, more so than you're saying yes, because there's a lot more bad ideas than there are good ideas.
Well, it sucks, but you actually start to realize you're doing people a service. When I say no, I'm not like a dick. I'm not like, yo, your shit sucks. Get the fuck out of my office. I'm like, hey, I'm concerned about this. Your customer acquisition plan's wrong. Right. Facebook ads have changed. You're gonna get caught there. Have you thought about this? Do you know that this guy's doing that over there? Like, I try to give constructive thought processes to my why. And I've had a lot of entrepreneurs over the decade reach out to me and be like, yo, your meeting where you broke my shit down, I went back home and re-fucking did it, and you fucking helped me. So I'm proud. I prefer to say yes, I don't like negativity. So like, I prefer to, but you're scared to lose your own money. You're not just real life. And number two, along the way I realized me giving people rationale to why no was actually incredibly valuable, sometimes more valuable than when I used to write checks and kind of sit on my shit.
Right.
And then it actually happened, be like, fuck, why didn't I, you know?
Right.
You mature along the way on how to give candorous, kind, feedback to your no.
Right. Is there anything in this space that we're talking about NFTs yeah. and all that you've missed out on that you look back on and you're like, geez, I wish I was a little bit more open-minded on that one?
No, because I'm very heavy in early stages into yes and willing to lose for the education, because I always play with time and money that I'm willing to lose. Most people play, a lot of people in gold rushes play with money they can't afford to lose because they're convinced they're gonna 10x, 100x, 50x. And so I'm incredibly thoughtful about the money I'm gonna play with. And then other people, like, they like hold up their time as valuable when their time's not valuable. Like, I'm willing to spend the time to work, I'm willing to spend the money to learn, and I'm willing to deal with everything going to zero if it doesn't pop off. So the answer is no, I don't have that regret, because anything I've been even somewhat curious about, I've bought.
I like it. That's why I think I'm gonna become a VFriends guy regardless of the face tattoo idea.
But what about the face tattoo idea?
The face tattoo idea is still on the table for sure, yeah. And I don't charge a lot either. I'm a cheap fuck.
Is it low?
It's low, for the low low.
It's like there's like friends.
Let me ask you this.
Yes.
We just seen a big, big indictment come down. Young Thug, Gunna, et cetera, all getting locked up. We're seeing a situation in which, you know, people who probably came up in the street to whatever extent end up making millions of dollars and end up in a situation where, from my perspective, it looks like this was a kind of exceedingly easy case for the government to make against them at some point. Now, with you, I know you've probably seen quite a few people over the years that start building an impressive business, but then they're still maybe a little too tapped in with the streets or doing some illegal shit on the side. What would be your advice to anybody who immediately just starts bringing in this huge amount of money as an entertainer or whatever and needs to really separate themselves from stuff that could get them thrown in prison?
It's a real, and you know this, if it was a black and white answer, it'd be so easy. There's not a human on earth that doesn't understand that on paper, you wanna get away from anything that creates a vulnerability. Here's the problem. And this is when I tell you I have zero knowledge of anything with the RICO stuff, especially, I mean, talking about a crusher for me, like my deep love for Gunna is off the charts. And I'm a huge fan of Thug, I don't know him. But, you know, the reality is that for a lot of people, and I see it with immigrant life, your friends, your family, they're still living life. You might have popped off, but you've got a humongous community that you came up with. And to like, everyone who doesn't know anything about how people that come up from little to make a lot, it's very easy for them to pontificate in their chair at home, be like, why don't they separate, right? These are your cousins, your aunts, your best friend, somebody that helped you out of a fucking tough situation. It's incredibly challenging and a complex situation. When I say I'm desperate, I'm desperately hoping that they're not in a bad spot. It's been a really tough week for that whole like scene between that and Keith. It's just been like, it's like, I feel incredibly emotional for people that are in the inner circles with that crew, because this must be one of the toughest weeks of their life.
That's a fact, yeah. The Keith thing coming on the heels of the indictment's fucking crazy. I guess last question, we are at a weed convention. How many businesses in the cannabis space are you involved with, and where do you think that the real opportunities and growth are in this space?
So I'm a large investor in a company called Green Street that is run by Rama. That's why I'm here, that's what this is all about. Underneath that, Rama's got a ton of stuff. We've got a brand called Asterisk with Juicy J, which is a lot of fun. To be transparent, I'm a non-operating partner in Green Street, so I'm not even sure how many things Rama has going on. I'm more the money, and I'm there for the backbone anytime. The space overall is super interesting. I grew up in the liquor business, which is regulated state by state. So when cannabis started getting legalized, and when I could see the country was finally ready to get over the hoop on it, I was like, okay, this is something I want to learn. So I'm still in the learning phase. You know, I'm on the board of a company called Rib Capital out of Canada. So I'm really in collecting information mode, because this is inevitable.
Right.
Like, for the rest of our lives, like, there will only be more acceptance.
We will see this space take shape in front of our eyes.
Right.
Yeah.
And for me, it's always about brands, right? Liquid Death was started by a former creative lead at VaynerMedia.
You invested in that?
I did. Michael's a good dude. So Nike, Privet, like all the shit we've been talking about. So I think my destiny long term is to be involved on the brand side. We'll see. But it's a very interesting space. And obviously, it's I think people forget how long the world's been around. Weed has only been a problem for less than 100 years, or about 100 years. So not been that, like, out of the history of time, we're just coming off the back end where we demonized it. But I think it's gonna help a lot of people with emotional, physical issues. I'm excited to see fungus and cannabis find their appropriate place in society and bring a lot of the benefits. I mean, I hate when people talk, like, I literally have meetings with some people, old heads, who try to shit on it while they're drinking a fucking cocktail. And I'm like, you do understand in 19, 20, and 30, people said the same thing about alcohol. Everything's fucked up when it's off balance. But in balance, everything can be appropriate. And so I think I'm excited that the stigma's going away. And I think we can have far healthier conversations around it in the next decade.
Definitely. Gary Vee, appreciate you. We're about to go on stage, I believe.